today's a special day. They all are to me. Every day is special that I get to come on the radio and share music and conversation with you. Today, Ray Stevens, absolute genius, musical genius, clever, a mind that, I don't think it ever stops working and devising and creating, and you're going to get to listen as we talk to Ray Stevens about not only the music that he's been involved with, and I guarantee you will know one of the tunes that he's had, whether it's a novelty tune or Everything is Beautiful or just some of the stuff that he's been involved in. He also has a new TV show. One of the reasons I wanted to talk to him, of course, is I do play every once in a while a tune from Ray Stevens on this program. And with the new TV show, it seemed like a good opportunity to get together and talk about the fact that he has a new show coming up and always has new music. My goodness, look at his website. Ray has never stopped recording. He's always out there creating and making things available. He has a new book also. We'll talk about all those things. And I can suggest this to you, too. You all remember The Streak? If you want to, it's radio. Get your streak on a little bit. Run around. Have some fun. I can't see you. You can't see me. I could be streaking in between tunes. I'm probably not going to be because of the length of the cord on my headset. But we're going to have fun today.
Hi, this is Ray Stevens, and you're listening to Steve Martin on Unreal Bluegrass.
Very happy to welcome to Unreal Bluegrass. This is going to be great. Ray Stevens, how you doing, Ray?
Oh, wonderful. Well, I should ask how much time you got if you really want to know, but that's a joke. I'm doing great, thanks.
Good, good. You sound good.
Well, good, thanks. Glad to hear that.
You sound good. We got a lot of stuff we want to talk about. I know you have a new TV show that's in the works, and we're gonna cover that to death at some point. And I will get there before we end, I promise you. But I have to let you know, the listeners know, that on my program, Unreal Bluegrass, it's not unusual for me to drop in a tune from Ray Stevens, some of those great tunes that you did that we all know and love.
Well, I'm glad to hear that, and I think it's appropriate because I'm a big bluegrass fan. I think bluegrass music is the jazz of country music. I mean, some of the greatest sounds in the world are in bluegrass music, in my humble opinion.
Well, it's funny that when you mention that, when you get to that level of musicianship, and I know you're a great musician yourself, and a lot of people may not realize that, when you get to that high level of musicianship, it almost is a crossover as far as improvising. Their ability to immediately channel what they're hearing to their instrument is a mastery of the instrument. Different scales, but same concept.
Yeah, I'm a big fan of bluegrass.
Cool. All right, good. Well, I wanted to talk to you about... as I go through these things in my head, you mentioned jazz. Everybody knows Errol Garner had a pretty solid hit on his hands for a long time. I think most people felt comfortable with Clint Eastwood. Felt so good about it, he made a movie based on someone calling.
And that Johnny Mathis record was sort of the flag bearer of that song.
Yeah. So here comes Ray Stevens, 20-something years later, and you decide to do an arrangement. Now, people know the songs that you write and perform and the other things that you do, and you have a book out, but you take this pretty comfortable jazz standard, Misty, and you make it your own, and the arrangement gets as much attention as anything else. You won awards for the arrangement. It's kind of an upbeat. I bet you, Ray, that if we talk to people now and ask them to start humming Misty, I bet you your arrangement comes out of more than half of the mouths of people that we would talk to.
Well, I think you might be right, and that's gratifying to hear. Misty with a banjo and a fiddle and a steel just was never considered. And we were clowning, me and the road band were clowning around in the studio just having fun, and it started sounding so good. We called the engineer in and recorded it in about just two takes.
Oh, good.
And it won the Grammy that year.
That's right.
Arrangement.
Yeah.
There you go.
Who'd have thunk it? Who'd have thunk it? I have this question for you, too, and I know a little bit about your background, just what I've been able to pick up. But how do you go, Ray, from let's just say, Guitar's Ann to Everything is Beautiful, two tunes that you're responsible for writing, not just arranging, the arrangement of Misty and other things you've done. You did a whole bunch of covers on that album that had Misty on it. But how do you go from writing a tune like Guitar's Ann, which is a huge hit, which I had the 45 of, to then turning around and doing this gorgeous tune, Everything is Beautiful? Totally different ends of the spectrum.
Well, it's all music to me. I mean, I don't like to restrict myself when it comes to music. I'm a big fan of many styles and many different arranging styles, you might say. So I don't know. I people who are only good at one aspect, that's fine, you know. But I don't want to be, you know, put in a box, so to speak.
I wish that I could remember, and I can't. I know it was a guest on Johnny Carson's show. That's how long back this goes. And they were talking about you. It wasn't you, all right. Somebody, big star, talking about music in Nashville, and this, I cannot remember who it was. This person told Carson, if there is a true genius in Nashville, it's Ray Stevens. And I can't remember who it was for the life of me.
Oh, God. Well, if you find out, let me know. I'd like to.
You thank him. I will. I'll let you know. And that was, of course, a while ago, but I thought, and then that's when I really started thinking about the all the stuff that you do. I know you do producing and arranging, is obvious, and writing, and you know, not just the novelty songs are a blast. Everybody knows Guitar's Ann and Jeremiah Peabody's, you know, Polyunsaturated. I'm going to blow it. You're going to have to help me on that one. Cause it just...
All right, Jeremiah Peabody's Polyunsaturated, quick dissolving, fast acting, pleasant tasting, green and purple pill.
That's right. Which, by the way, you think about it now with the FDA, what they've done to relax commercials for prescription drugs, that might fit exactly into a regular commercial these days.
Yeah, you know, I mean, at these days, Jeremiah's pills would be abused by the people, and it would probably cause some adverse reaction. But back in the old days, they were good for anything.
And I think that was, thinking back, I think that might have been the first. Was that the song, or was that the event that made you realize that you needed to do music as a full-time thing? Or were you already convinced to do that from success you'd had?
Well, you know, I was pretty much in the tank for the music business when I was 17. I made my first record when I was 17. I was still in high school. And I was, at that time, thinking about going to Georgia. I was living in Atlanta, thinking about going to Georgia Tech, studying architecture, because I love architecture. But I decided, nah, I'll just go into the music business, because that's a lot more fun. And I'm kind of glad I did, because it's worked out pretty good.
Oh, I think so. I think so. How do you go from this? And I want to back up in a minute, and I'll remember to do this. I want to talk a little bit about, when you mentioned school and college, I want to talk a little bit about, just hit on the fact that what your musical training is. But how do you go from this? And I remember this clearly. Sometime in the 70s, somebody decided to take their clothes. By the way, it was always a man. I don't know why. It was always a man decided to take their clothes off and run across either a campus or a football field or down a street. And I think, Ray, before the guy was handcuffed and arrested and booked, you had a hit song out called The Streak.
Well, you know, I read an article in I think it was Newsweek or Time, one of those weekly news magazines, on a plane flying back to Nashville from L.A. And in the back, it had a little blurb about a college student in California took his clothes off, ran through a crowd, and they called it streaking. And I thought, wow, that's a great idea for a song, not knowing that it would catch on. And with such, you know, fierce ferocity. So I wrote the song and got in the studio and I cut it, you know, and by the time I could get the record out, there were already a dozen other records out about streaking. Now, I never heard all of them. I heard a few of them, and the ones I heard weren't all that good.
They weren't.
But mine was the one that made it.
Absolutely.
And I think the fact that I got the idea to write the song before anybody else. I think the other songs were written after streaking became such a national fad, but my song was written when nobody hardly knew about streaking, so maybe that's the reason it was a better song, maybe.
It was a better song because you're probably better at composition, but I also think that you might have extended the fad a little bit more. Since your song was so popular, I think people might have, which is not a, or not necessarily a bad thing if there's naked people running around. Not always. It could be harmless, but I think you're
strong. Well, you mentioned that only boys were streaking, but at the shows that I would do, at the concerts that I would do after the streak became a big hit, we had a lot of girls streaking. Oh, it was great. I loved it, for the band was always on the lookout for a pretty girl running through the audience without her clothes on.
I've met with Ray, if only there were YouTube, if only there was YouTube back in those days.
Hell yeah.
You know.
Facebook would have been burning up.
That's right. Your songs are so much, and I've hit on just a few of them, your songs are so much a part of history, I think, of... And I don't, you know, the term novelty to him, because I know you're serious about music. And listen, there's not a juxtaposition greater than between Katarzan or The Streak and Everything is Beautiful. But your music is such a part of at least my child. I mean, I remember Jeremiah Peabody. I'm old enough to catch up on all those things. But everything that you did was, it just seemed like it was so universally accepted Yeah, you chose. Yeah, architecture would be cool, but yeah, you definitely chose the right career path.
Well, I thank you for that endorsement. Now, my first song, comedy song, that was headed for the charts, it was going to be a big hit, and we had to pull it off the market, was Sergeant Preston of the Yukon. And in my exuberance, I had neglected to get permission from the people that owned the character, Sergeant Preston, to use him in a song. And for some reason, they didn't want that going on. So they sent a letter that I should cease and desist.
Cease and desist, yeah.
We had to pull that record off the market. It's a good thing that they didn't feel that way about Alley Oop, or we wouldn't have had that hit.
These people,
I don't know where they were coming from, but
They didn't want free publicity.
I guess.
That didn't make any sense.
I pulled a record off the market and got the idea to do original characters in my comedy songs from then on.
Oh, boy, I'll tell you, I can't tell you how many 45s, of course, we probably half the listeners are saying 45 caliber, what? No, 45 records, the little plastic vinyl records. How many of your songs that I had in the home? Not like I was in a home, I mean in my home growing up, but boy, they were just always around, and you were just always right there, something new, Ahab the Arab. I can remember them all.
Well, bless your heart. Thanks.
Great stuff.
Listen, you're the guy who bought all of
them. I'm the guy who bought them all. You are surviving off of more than my, you know, buck for going up to the drugstore and picking one up. I guarantee you, you were big time. What your musical training, I know a little bit. I want to talk about that. Then I want to talk about this TV show that I know is coming out. And we'll talk about whatever, but let's let people know why, you know, Ray Stevens actually knows what he's doing in a studio.
Is the ball in my court? Was that a question?
Yeah, man. Yeah, it's one of those. You know, it happens a lot. I'll make a statement and people say, I want you to talk about your musical training. I know you
have
something.
Well, you want me to talk about it?
Yeah, man. I don't have that.
Oh, okay. Well, when I was six, my mama made me take piano lessons. Let's put it that way. I wanted to go outside and play baseball, but none of that. I had to practice for an hour every day, and then I could go outside and play baseball with the other kids. And I was 6 years old. And I said, okay, and I grudgingly practiced. And then one day a light went on in my head, and I thought, wait a minute, this is not all that hard. And I figured it out. I started playing the piano by ear, but I also, during the process, learned to read music. So after a lot of years with private lessons, I majored in music at Georgia State, theory and composition, and... then met a music publisher in Atlanta, Bill Lowry, who encouraged me to write songs. And the first song I brought him, he loved it, and he got me a record deal with it. So, I mean, it's been a fortunate thing that my mama was so insistent that I practiced the piano, because even though I wanted to be a baseball player, I don't think I'd have ever made it. I'm just not big enough to be a baseball player.
You know how odd. Well, of course you do. You know how odd it is to write a song and get a contract. That's just unheard of. And even then, I mean, now it's impossible. But then, just to say my first song and someone's going to hire me to write songs and give me a contract, is that just doesn't happen.
Yeah. Well, you know, I had a band in high school, and my guitar player was Jerry Reed.
Oh, good.
And Joe South would play with us from time to time. And, you know, we had a great little band, and we'd play for, you know, Georgia Tech fraternity parties, things like that, around Atlanta. And so I was kind of, I had a little experience under my belt when I was 17.
Do you, Ray, when you write a song, let's say La Streak, okay, you get the idea, but do you write the melody as you're writing the words, or do the words just come to you, then you fit them into something that it would be appropriate for that
topic?
You know,
in my case, it all just kind of happens at the same time.
Okay.
I'll get an idea, and usually the idea indicates what the title should be, and you start constructing the song, and based on the sentiment you're trying to get across in the song, that will indicate, you know, if it's a slow song or a fast song or whatever, and it just sort of falls together
okay. All
at the same time.
I don't have that experience, and I can't even touch on that type of ability, and I'm always curious. I usually ask songwriters how that happens, and some have some write words and then put it to music, and it's just, if it all happens at once, it just makes it, I'm not saying it just comes to you out of the blue, but as you're working on it, it kind of fits together on the tone, I guess, of what you're trying to do.
Yeah,
that's good. That's good. You wrote a lot of them. You wrote a lot of great ones, and everybody enjoys them, and they get to hear them a lot on this program often. So I wanted to talk to you about now you've decided, all this other stuff you've done and still do, now you have a TV show.
Yeah, we've produced a music talk show from Nashville. It's called Ray Stevens Nashville, and I have a book out by the same title. And RFD has picked it up, and it's going to start airing November 7th. And we've already shot 13 episodes, and we're going to shoot 13 more in December, so that we'll have 26 episodes by the end of the year, and we'll be able to be on the air with 26 episodes for a complete year beginning November 7th. And then, of course, if the response is good and we want to continue with the show, well, we'll get back in the studio and produce 26 more.
13 episodes you do in what time frame?
We originally shot 2 one-hour shows, and that took, two or three days maybe. And then we got to thinking that we would rather have 30-minute shows. So we cut those 2 one-hour shows into 4 30-minute shows, and we needed 9 more to round up the 13, which is a magic number. So we cut the remaining 9 in 4 days. And so I guess, you know, it took 6-7 days to do the whole 13. We're going to shoot with the experience under our belt. Now we can go a little faster. And I think we can shoot 13 more in about 5 days in December. We're going to try that anyway.
Can you give us a hint to some of the guests? I know that you want to probably maybe save that for promotional, but who might drop by, if you can say?
Well, we got Larry Gatlin, we got Steve Warner, we do a songwriter segment, we got Don Schlitz, we got the musician Nashville Cats segment, if you know what a Nashville Cat is.
Yeah, sure, absolutely.
And Charlie McCoy came by, mm-hmm. and we've got Bobby Bear, Tanya Tucker came by, Susie Boggess. In December, Mel Tillis is going to come by,
great.
And who else? Well, we're still booking
people
for the December shoot, but I think we're going to get, my memory is...
Hey, listen, that's a pretty good list. That's a pretty good list already, Ray, and we just assume they're all going to be that caliber because you have that ability to call those people in and they'll come running and participate. That's my guess.
Well, I mean, you know, it's hard to get a lot of people because they're booked. They're out on the road, you know.
Right.
But we try to work around everybody's schedule. And Bobby Goldsboro's coming in.
Oh, cool. All right.
Been a while since you've seen him.
It has been, but I would look forward to watching the show because I bet he'll do his cricket or his frog in person.
Oh, that's the cricket, I think.
Cricket, whatever.
Every time he calls me, he always goes, "Ricket," whatever that sound is. I know immediately who it is.
You know what I signed up to? You have a good website that explains a lot of stuff about the book that's available, and you've already given the name of the book, but they can go to a website and find a lot of good information. I signed up on a newsletter, and I got invitations as a result to maybe come down if I had time to be in the studio audience.
Yeah.
And I assume that's something you'll keep doing as you keep filming these.
Well, unless we just get overbooked for the audience. Yeah. But, you know, we're shooting at a weird time. We're shooting in the mornings and in the afternoons. And there's an audience turnover, the morning audience, and then there's the afternoon audience. And it's during the week. So, you know, we're not, and we're kind of out of the way. We're shooting it in my little video studio, which is down the street from my office here in Nashville on Music Row.
Okay.
So it's a lot of fun, and we will probably continue to invite people to be in the audience.
Well, you know, if it's something you happen to be in town for, it would be great to stop by if you could, if you got the invitation and run in and be a part of that audience. It'd be great. With the list that you're talking about now, the guests, I mean, there's not a lightweight in the bunch, you know.
Yeah, it's a lot of fun.
Oh, yeah. Are you out performing? If they go to your website, well, they'll see the book and they'll see music. I'm sure that you have a store available, but do you have an appearance schedule on there?
Yeah, and it's a little light at this point because I was off the road for a couple of years, and I just decided to go back out. So we're just now starting to fill in the dates. But we just worked the Country Tonight Theater in Pigeon Forge, did two shows there night before last, and it was great. We had two big crowds, and the night before that we worked Bowling Green, Kentucky, and Sky Pack, Southern Kentucky Performing Arts Center, and we had a great crowd there. This year we've worked Myrtle Beach and Branson, worked the Andy Williams Moon River Theater in Branson. And we're going to Canada and do a casino up north of Toronto this coming weekend. So, you know, the dates are starting to fall in.
Once people know that Ray Stevens is back on the road, it must not take long to get a decent crowd.
Well, you know, a lot of promoters book way down the road, so you got to be available 6 months or to 9 months before the fact, or they're already, you know, they're... program is already full. Their dance card is full, so to speak. So that's a bit of a drawback. But since we've been back out for 6 months or so, that's starting to come around.
Well, people have to be, you know, they must be thinking, man, I can go see Ray Stevens. I would do it. If he came near Cincinnati, Northern Kentucky, or I would find a way to go see. I just think it would be a great show.
I'm glad to hear that.
Well, do you have any new music? If they go to the website, will they find new? You're always putting out music. Do you have anything new that you're
doing? Oh, listen, I've had a studio since 1970, and I'm always in there. I don't like to see it go to waste because I don't rent it out. It's just for me.
Mm-hmm.
And so I got to keep the engineer in groceries. So I'm in the studio constantly. We've got a lot of new material coming out. The newest album is called Here We Go Again, and it's got Taylor Swift is Stalking Me in it, which is
that's right.
A song that's gotten a lot of attention.
I forgot about it. I'm glad you meant I forgot about that one.
Yeah, and it's got you said earlier before this interview that you sometimes played a Jerry Clower cut from one of his albums, and there's a song in this, my new album, Here We Go Again, called Knocking Out John. One of Jerry's stories. He was a great friend of mine.
Oh, he was a great guy. Yeah, what I was telling Ray before we came on the air is there's a regular segment on the Unreal Bluegrass Show, which is a three-hour program. At some point, I will drop in. I'll make the announcement that, you know, I'm a little bit outside the flat-top box, and they're just as likely to hear Ray Stevens. They might hear Jerry Clower, Homer, and Jethro, just because I love it, and I think it's fun and entertaining, and you get as much play in that slot as anybody, and that's why it was just such a thrill to get a chance to talk to you.
Am I supposed to answer something?
Yeah, I can keep talking. Listen, I'm a lawyer and a broadcaster. I can talk forever, but I feel like I dominate the conversation, so I stop every once in a while for somebody else to
pitch in. Your breath, I guess.
Well, this is great. I can't tell you how excited I am talking to Ray.
Well, great. I'm glad to have your support, and I appreciate the opportunity to tell your audience about the TV show.
Yeah, oh, it'll be a blast, and I just think that if people just sit and think about all the people that you know that you can pull into the show, it's going to just grow. You know, Tim Conway, you've already got 26 shows lined up. Tim Conway used to have a bump. His license plate used to say 13 weeks because that's all his shows ever did when his own shows. And, but you've already got 13 and 13 more on the way, so you're over that hump already.
Well, if you call that a hump, okay.
it'll be a success. Everything you've done has been a success. You just had one effort.
What?
Everything you've done has been a success. The TV show will be a success also. I'm looking forward to it getting up on the air. So, Ray Stevens, man, it's been a blast. I think we've covered pretty much what you're doing right now, a little bit about what you've done in the past, but everybody knows Ray Stevens, so just to have the opportunity to chat with you for a minute, it's been an honor to me.
Thanks for having me on, Steve.
I will. Thank you, sir. I'll let you get back to your busy day. I know you're always recording or doing something, so Ray Stevens, thanks so much for stopping by Unreal Bluegrass. I appreciate it.
Thanks for having me.
All right. Thanks so much, Ray Stevens. There's only one Ray Stevens, and that's all we need. We couldn't handle two people like Ray Stevens. The talent would just overwhelm us all. We'd be awash in great, clever music. In the conversation, you heard us talk about the tune Misty, and I want to make this point. Great classic, became kind of a jazz ballad, I think, and everybody could sing it. And at least knew the way, and Ray remembered it was Johnny Mathis's version and a nice kind of plaintive sound. And then he made it this upbeat kind of snap-your-finger tune. And I do believe that if you ask most of the people, they will respond with that type of up-tempo version that won Ray his Grammy. And for proof of that, as my evidence I will offer in this program, Del McCurry, a year or so ago, Streets of Baltimore, did a version of Misty. This Misty that Del did is based exactly upon the tempo that Ray Stevens, in his mind, decided that that lovely ballad Misty would work better at. And you're going to hear that right now, and you will see what I'm saying. When you hear this, you'll think, oh, yeah, that's it. That's not the Johnny Mathis version. That's the tempo that Ray put on a great song and made it better, gave it a new life and a new direction. Thanks again, Ray Stevens. I'm a lucky person.